Good afternoon, ladies and gentlemen. With that gavel, I have convened the Transportation and Economic Development Subcommittee of Ways and Means for June 17th, 2015. We are gathered today for the purpose of a work session on Senate Bill 5525, the Oregon Business Development Department, and House Bill 2280A relating to the Oregon Growth Fund. And Mr. Bender, if you would start us out on SB 5525, I will open a work session on SB 5525.
Thank you, Madam Co-Chair and Subcommittee members. Senate Bill 5525 is the budget bill for the Oregon Business Development Department. We do have a posted on OLIS a memo called the SB 5525 LFO work session materials, and I will be going through that memo or that item, which actually has attachments to it. So please let me know if you have any questions as I go through this. I would like to note one thing. There are a number of requests in the Business Oregon budget request for projects that are supported or funded by bond proceeds. And at in this current recommendation, we do not address those. The bonding decisions are being worked on by the Capital Construction Subcommittee, and they will be making decisions on bond levels, though any information that you have to convey to them, we will do that. But the remaining packages or requests that are not related to bonds, we have recommendations here for your consideration. If I may go through the recommendations, I would just like to begin going through the work session presentation report. As you know, these reports are always organized by the budget structure of the agency. And just to sort of set this up for you, this agency really has two large program budget units, the Business Innovation and Trade Unit, or division, and the Infrastructure Finance Authority. They have separate programs, and the agency is reorganizing and moving some programs from one division to the other. But the fact that the agency does have these two major divisions makes it easier when you look through this report, because most of the adjustments fall within one particular SCR. Those aren't the only two divisions of the agency. They also house the Arts Commission, Cultural Trust. They serve as the pass-through entity for Oregon Film and Video Office. But those are the two main divisions of the agency. But if you do look at the work session presentation report, the first division is one that I haven't mentioned, which is Shared Services Central Pool, which begins on page 2. For the Shared Services Central Pool, we have only one adjustment that we're recommending that you make on page 3, and it relates entirely to the reorganization and realignment of the budget with the new agency organization. In that sense, it's technical. These agency realignment packages don't increase or reduce the budget overall, but they do place the expenditures and programs in the units that currently reflect how the agency is organized or is reorganizing. So if you look at page 3, we have a recommendation that you approve budget recommendations to transfer the research and policy section from shared services to business innovation and trade. This involves reducing lottery funds by $239,417, other funds by $200,705, and eliminating two positions. Again, none of this is eliminated. It will just be moved over to a different division. And the division that it will be moved over is the next one, the Business Innovation and Trade. Business Innovation and Trade is the division of the agency that has where most of the lottery fund requests are housed. So as we go through this division, you will hear recommendations on most of the lottery fund requests that you heard from the agency in their presentation. The first recommendation is shown on page 5 of 27, and that is for funding for Oregon Innovation Council initiatives. We recommend that you approve $17,908,981 in lottery funds to fund Oregon Inc. initiatives in the amounts shown. And the amounts are shown on page 5. Fundamentally, ONAMI is funded at approximately $6 million. BEST is funded at approximately $5.9 million. The OTRADI is funded at approximately $2 million. SOAR Oregon is at $3 million. DRIVE Oregon is at $750,000. And the Oregon Wave Energy Trust is funded at $250,000. As an adjustment from prior practice, these Oregon Inc. initiatives had always in the past been approved by the legislature on a one-time basis, and were any additional funds or ongoing funds were requested in a policy option package. That is what you see here before you today. This is a policy option package where there is zero funding in the base budget. So the $17.9 million that you're adding is or would be the total amount of funding that would be available for these. However, the agency is instructed to include the total funding amount approved for Oregon Innovation Council initiatives in its base budget moving onward. The agency will, essentially this means that the funding is no longer being approved on a one-time basis, but it will be in the base budget. The agency shall identify the funding levels for individual initiatives in the current service level budget and may change support levels for individual initiatives within the current service level portion of its budget request. So although the $17.9 million is being rolled forward, individual funding amounts are not.
And Mr. Bender, I want to be clear and build a legislative record about this. The three signature research centers will have durability over the biennia, but the whole plan behind Oregon Inc. was that these were to be industry vetted, industry initiated, with a lot of private sector scrutiny, and different initiatives would come and go over time. They would get some support from the state, theoretically get enough earned revenue or opportunity to go off on their own, and then others would fill in behind them. By putting them in the base budget, you still leave open the option that the Oregon Innovation Council could come up with new initiatives, and some of these could graduate and rotate out, making room for other industry-vetted and industry-approved opportunities.
Yes, that's correct. The intention is not to in any way interfere with the ability of the Oregon Innovation Council to review proposals that are submitted to it, to prioritize and to recommend funding levels to the legislature, which those requests do come through the department's budget.
I have a question.
Senator Hanson.
I just want to, I should know this and I can't remember, but the Oregon Rain, is it in this one or is it another part of the budget?
It will be coming later.
We'll get to that.
Yeah, there is funding for Rain in this budget, but it is actually in a different package.
Great. Thank you.
Representative Reed.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Just out of the proverbial abundance of caution, you and I being ex officio members on the Innovation Council, I was not able to participate in the deliberations that brought us to this point, but I want to thank you for the point you just made. I think putting the innovation agenda in a general sense into a more solid place in our process and making that commitment to an innovation agenda on the over the long term is a very positive step. I appreciate your work on that.
If there are no further questions on the Oregon Innovation Council funding, I will move on to page 6.
I guess I have one more question.
Senator Hansel.
Do we ever not fund something once it gets on the list? Because there's some on that list, for me personally, the Oregon Wave Energy Trust is one that I might not have it, but I'm just curious.
If I can be bold enough to answer the question, given my familiarity with this whole undertaking, the answer is yes. Some have voluntarily chosen not to fill out the paperwork and initiate contracts with Oregon Business Development Department. Some have graduated. Some there were misunderstandings that led to not fulfilled contracts about who owned capital equipment, who didn't. So the herd has changed and thinned, and I think that each one of the industry initiatives needs to continue to demonstrate its merit to the Innovation Council that is largely made up of academics, private sector folks, agency people from Oregon Business Development, to be able to stay on the list. And I think in some cases where you see funding levels reduced, it is a reflection of the fact that maybe the long-term performance has not been what was expected, and it's a signal that it's time to start thinking about other initiatives. And for people that are listening and may not be familiar with Oregon Inc., the whole idea was to use Oregon's indigenous strength in certain areas to capture an emerging market or a place where Oregon could be in the vanguard of different activities. And so, yes, they come and go.
Thank you.
On page 6 of the work session presentation report, we have our next recommendation. The agency requested 2 additional positions in business innovation and trade, and the recommendation does include approval of both of those position requests. The first of those is found in package 102. The agency requested establishment of an additional full-time research analyst for to support its research data collection and analysis and improve the ability of the department to monitor and review its economic development efforts. We do recommend in favor of that. It's $189,111 in lottery funds. It's one position, 0.87 FTE, to give the agency time to hire someone. The next page, package 104, is the second of the 2 positions. This would be a position, an international trade promotion position, and it would assist the department's efforts to expand the ability of Oregon businesses to engage in export activity. We recommend approval. The expenditures are $221,932 lottery funds, and again, it's one position beginning in October. The next recommendation is found on page 8 of 27. The package is 105, Industry Competitiveness Fund. The Industry Competitiveness Fund finances a number of programs. I would just like to refer specifically to the 2 programs that would receive funding under the LFO recommendation for package 105. We're recommending that you approve $950,000 of lottery funds to support 2 programs. $750,000 would supplement funding for the Oregon Manufacturing Extension Partnership. That's a nonprofit that assists manufacturers in improving their efficiency and operations. And another $200,000 would support the Grow Oregon Economic Gardening Pilot Project. We note that the $200,000 that would go for Grow Oregon Pilot Project is approved on a one-time basis and will be phased out in the development of the agency's budget next biennium. This is a pilot project and is continuously under review. The next item that was requested on page 9, I've listed it, but this is one of the requests for bond funds, and we have no recommendation to provide any or to include any budget adjustments for it. This was the request to recapitalize the Brownsfield Redevelopment Fund. There is a $7 million request that came in, and there are no adjustments at this time for that.
Mr. Bender, I'm going to take you at your word when you made your opening comments about having the committee give back a sense of the committee to the decision makers that are working with the capital construction. There are several elements in that special public works that are exceedingly important, and one of them, I submit, is the brownfields matter. And as long as you are the neutral reporter back to the committee, unless I hear objection, I would like a sense of the committee expressed back to the big co-chairs and the capital construction that the committee feels that the brownfield reinvestment funds are a very significant part of moving Oregon's economy forward. Yeah. Representative Reed.
Madam Chair, I'm very glad to hear that. I've been representing that already in the capital construction subcommittee, so I'm glad to have the hopefully the backing of this committee as well.
Thank you. I forgot that you were on that committee. I apologize. Sorry. Anyway, so unless there is objection, the sense of the committee is that that is an exceptionally important element under the aegis of OBDD. Okay. Please continue.
The next package is Package 109, Oregon Growth Board. The agency requested $83,968 of lottery funds to increase the existing operation and policy analyst 4 position that was established to provide administrative support to the Oregon Growth Board from a half-time position to a full-time position. We are recommending that to improve the department's ability to manage its responsibilities related to the Oregon Growth Board. The next item on page 11 is package 111, Innovation Initiatives. In this package, we are recommending funding to support the Oregon Metals Initiative and the Northwest Collaboratory for Sustaining Manufacturing. Our recommendation is that you provide $3,249,065 of lottery funds for these programs. This amount includes $2.5 million above the current service level. These initiatives received $2.2 million last biennium through Business Oregon's budget, but it was provided on a one-time basis. The $2.5 million, therefore, would represent an increase over the $2.2 million. The agency also, last biennium, received part of its funding OUS budget, which is now subsumed by the Higher Education Coordinating Commission. There's an additional $749,000 that was received in that agency budget. We're recommending consolidating all the funding with Oregon Business. That is why our recommendation is not just to provide the $2.5 million, but it's the $2.5 million plus the $749,000 that's coming over from HEC. There's an offsetting reduction in the HEC's budget of the $749,000 that was in that budget. We also have a budget note here for your consideration relating to this particular package. As you know, subcommittees are asked to approve budget notes and to consider them by vote. And I don't know, you can either do that at this point or after the recommendation is over, but I would just like to read the budget note, which relates to the participation of Oregon Business Development Department in these initiatives. And the budget note reads, the subcommittee finds that the Oregon Metals Initiative contributes to the advancement of Oregon's innovation and entrepreneurship economy. The subcommittee understands that the Oregon Metals Initiative will add the director of the Oregon Business Development Department, or the director's designee, to the board of the Oregon Metals Initiative as an ex officio member to continue the success of the Oregon Metals Initiative and to further enhance the collaboration between private businesses and public entities.
And colleagues, I guess the only question that I would have, Mr. Bender, is the ex officio status versus the voting status. That was a piece that had been lost on me. I don't know if there are strong feelings about voting status or not. And I'm getting head nods no, and so that sounds like just a dandy budget note.
Yeah, so the budget note's silent on whether this ex officio member is voting or non-voting. So I don't know.
Okay.
Either way would conform to the budget note as long as the director is appointed to the board.
Okay, please continue.
The final, I think, no, maybe this isn't the final. This, the next, no, it's definitely not the final. The next package, in numerical order, the way that this report prints in, on page 12 of 27, are some adjustments. Package 801. Package 801 reduces support for the Strategic Reserve Fund by $1.7 million in lottery funds to address limitations in the general availability of general and lottery fund revenues to support the state budget. The package increases other funds expenditures, however, from the Strategic Reserve Fund by $900,000 to partially offset the impact of the lottery funds reduction. So the Strategic Reserve Fund does have other funds, does have another funds balance in it from loan repayments, from other interest and other sources. So the combined impact of this package is to reduce local Strategic Reserve Fund expenditures, total Strategic Reserve Fund expenditures, by about $800,000 from the CSL. And again, this is to help balance the budget. That's the easiest way to say it. Next, on page 13, package 802, this is the technical adjustments where due to their agency realignment, we would like to have the agency expenditures in the same divisions where the programs are now going to be housed. Fundamentally, we've noted that the policy and research section is moving into BITD, Business Innovation and Trade, but there are a number of programs that are moving out. So the reorganization primarily is shifting a number of programs from Business Innovation and Trade into the Infrastructure Finance Authority portion of the budget. Those programs are the Brownsfields Program, Industrial Lands, Broadband, Seismic Rehabilitation, which is split now, but which will be entirely consolidated in IFA, and their associated services and supplies expenditures. So we note there on page 32, I don't necessarily need to read these numbers out to you, but these are simply the adjustments that accomplish that. There is also one adjustment that doesn't fall into the net zero category. That is, we're also including in here a recommendation that you increase the federal funds expenditure limitation by $281,712 for the federal Step 3 grant expenditures in this upcoming biennium. This is a previously awarded grant. As you may recall, the agency has applied for a Step 4 grant, but that is not affected by this package. It's just for the grants that have already been received. Finally, we have a revenue adjustments package. This is primarily a technical adjustments to update a number of items. What this package does is it adjusts both lottery funds and expenditures to account for updated projections of lottery fund beginning balances. We want the budget to reflect what the agency, the cash that the agency actually has on hand, so we can see, given your budget decisions, how much cash we would expect them to have at the end of the biennium. We also want to account for a new law that was passed in 2013 that will affect the agency's budget in the 2015-17 biennium. That new law reverts all uncommitted lottery funds that have not been spent at the end of the biennium back to the DAS Economic Development Fund. This is a new provision, and this, the adjustments here actually account for the transfer of those monies out of the agency's accounts and back to the central state account that distributes lottery funds. And finally, there are some adjustments in carryover expenditures. These are projects that were funded last biennium that will be incurring expenses due to commitments in the current biennium. The budget accounts for or projects many of these cases, but as additional information comes in, this package adjusts for them. And it does result in a net $1,011,915 of lottery fund expenditures, but most of that is attributable to, none of this is attributable to any new money. It's previously allocated money that would be spent, and much of it is attributed to Oregon Growth Fund, because if you do pass House Bill 2280, which is next on your agenda today, their expenditures would be in this budget. Their expenditures of grants would be in this budget, as well as their expenditure for administrative purposes. The next item, page 15, is $300,000 of supplemental funding for the Oregon Small Business Development Center Network, package 804. It includes $200,000 to the Capital Access Team and $100,000 to the Network Technology Impact Program. This package increases support to the Oregon Business Development Center Network to a total, and if you're looking here, I was pointed out that the number I wrote is incorrect. The actual total will now be $2,568,194. So this is supplementing funding to that level, but the funding is dedicated to those two programs.
Could you give me that figure again?
Oh, certainly, Senator. The total funding to the Small Business Development Centers Network, including this package, would be $2,568,197.
And may I just ask for just a moment, and that would be an increase over the current level of
$300,000. There is a small increase built in for inflation as part of the current service level. But the actual additional funding for programs beyond the general inflationary adjustment would be the $300,000 that you would add here.
Thank you.
And that concludes the Business Innovation and Trade Division. The next big division is the Infrastructure Financing Authority. Many of their requests were for bond proceeds, so we have no recommendation there. But we do have a request. They did ask for an additional position, Program Analyst 3, to serve as a regional coordinator, to serve as an additional infrastructure coordinator in a region of the state. We do recommend providing or approving that. That would be $189,859 of other funds and establish one position. Package 110 is the Seismic Rehabilitation Grant Program. There was a request in the agency budget for $100 million in bonds. We don't have anything in here at this point because that's still under consideration by the Capital Construction Subcommittee. Package 117 is request for funding for regional solutions. You may recall that the request was for a total of $7 million plus $1 million in addition specifically for rain. So it was $8 million in lottery funds and $14 million in lottery bond proceeds, which would be spent in the agency budget as other funds. Again, the bond proceeds portion, there's no recommendation on that. But on the lottery funds portion, out of the $8 million that was requested, we are recommending $1 million of lottery funds, and that will go to RAIN. So we have $1 million for the Regional Accelerator and Innovation Network.
And colleagues, let me just stop you because this starts to get fairly confusing at this point. I've been confused on more than one occasion, so it might benefit for some clarification, and I think the folks at RAIN were quite concerned. In this request, as you heard Mr. Bender say, there was requests for regional solution projects. Some of them were capital, some of them were operations. Then RAIN had an independent appropriation from last biennium of $1 million, and this is now a second iteration. I'm told by the RAIN folks that this will be the last time that RAIN comes to the legislature. And at least I want to put my expectation that that's the case on the record. But traveling in a parallel universe is the regional solutions request, where there is yet another RAIN request. And for a sense of the committee, to go back to capital construction, and we're very fortunate that Representative Reed is a member of that committee, the regional solution projects have been vetted up through a local process. There was considerable concern that we could not bond operations with 20-year debt, but there are a number of capital projects, and that that money would move to Oregon Business Development Department, where it, the projects would be scrutinized to make sure that they had met the basic requirements of regional solution, that they had leveraged other money, that it was a collaborative process that had resulted in projects that had were generally agreed upon. Some of them may have been troubled projects that needed to be worked through in some kind of a collaborative way. But that that money would then go to the Oregon Business Development Department. They would have their backroom bankers look at it to make sure that the projects were feasible, were economically sound. And then the proponents of the projects from the various regional solutions regions, the 11 of them, would enter into contracts with Oregon Business Development Department. So the other million for RAIN is traveling in that regional solutions money, and I would very much like to get a sense again of the committee about providing money out of lottery bond proceeds to be able to do the regional solutions projects that are capital, not operations. Any objections to having that go forward as a sense of the committee? Representative Nierman.
Thank you, Senator. So does this follow the pattern of how Regional Solutions has been funded through lottery bonded dollars like that? Is this?
Yes and no, and I'll give you my answer. The director of Regional Solutions is here. Regional Solutions had operated generally without money to do programs for or projects for a really long time, since its inception. And having been a convener on a number of those projects, it was our job to identify the problem, identify the solution, get the right people around the table to do it, and then try to go out and execute on whatever the solution was. In some instances, the projects were getting so large, multi-million dollar projects, that we needed to go leverage private funds. We needed to kind of build a mosaic of funding. And the last money in was the state's participation, sort of the but-for money. Last biennium, for the first time, money was appropriated to the 11 regional solutions teams to do projects. And it was a sort of a mixed bag. Some of the money went to OBDD. Some of it was place named in budgets. And so this is our attempt to try to corral those projects, get them into Oregon Business Development Department shop where they can be vetted, and that we have a greater sense of have they done what Regional Solutions was designed to do, which is to create this leverage collaborative process. And so there is really no standard. This is only the second time that money has been appropriated for Regional Solutions, and it's now in the form of bond proceeds to do capital projects, while the list originally started with a lot of operations that can't be bonded. You don't want to do operations with 20-year debt. And I would just ask Mr. Bender to correct any misimpressions that I've left on the record, but being fairly close to Regional Solutions, that is the best answer I can give you.
Thank you.
Mr. Bender, did I?
I don't believe that, yeah, there's what you said, I would agree with. I do note that the, well, that's fine. I'll just go on.
Okay. Was that responsive?
That was very quick.
Okay. So, sense of the committee that having being included in the lottery bond cap construction deliberations money for these capital regional solutions, any objections to having that go forward as a sense of the committee?
I just have one more
question. Representative
Nierman. Is this going to come back to this committee, or is it going to go to
You will not see it again.
Okay.
Until you're voting on the floor.
I have no objections to it. Thank you.
Okay. All right, Mr. Bender, I think you have the sense of the committee. Please continue.
We're on to page 20 of 27, so you can see we're getting there. Package 10802 in the Infrastructure Financing Authority is a net plus package because, again, this is the impacts of moving many of those programs that are coming over from BITD in. So this is transferring the five employees and the expenditures associated with brownfields, industrial lands, broadband, and the seismic rehabilitation program.
And just for the record, so there's no ambiguity, the broadband program stays with Oregon Business Development Department.
That is correct.
Okay, thank you.
I have a question.
Representative Whitson.
Yeah, I was wondering again if you could discuss the seismic rehabilitation program is not part of the $100 million request for seismic retrofitting or whatever. What will this go to specifically, this part?
Representative, this includes transferring staff who operate that program out of the five positions, one of these five positions is staff, the person who manages the seismic rehabilitation program. Currently or previously, they were in the Business Innovation and Trade Division under the department's reorganization. We're moving them over to infrastructure finance. So it's a net zero cost. It was taken out of one division and added in here.
May I ask how
follow
much,
up, Representative Whitson.
How much it is, even though it's a net zero here, what is the amount?
Oh, certainly.
For that one position.
Here, I'll hold your stuff.
Oh, that's, would you know, but anyway.
Don't have
okay. This wasn't a request that came in the agency request, so it will be a little more difficult to find, but...
Representative Whitson, would you mind if Mr. Bender got back to you?
That's fine. I was wondering if you might identify it also. Is it an engineer? Just what the job description is and what the...
They're program manager.
Which is what?
Let's ask the agency to come up and describe the position. Thank you very much. You'd identify yourself for the record before starting.
Chair Johnson, members of the committee, Amanda Beidel, the Chief Financial Officer with the Oregon Business Development Department. So that position is a program analyst 4, which is a state classification for someone who manages a program. It was transferred to us last biennium from the military department. And Lynn Chesler, the Assistant Director of Infrastructure, would be able to give details as to what that person actually does.
Welcome, Mr. Chesler.
Committee members, my name is Lynn Chesler. I manage the Infrastructure Finance Authority. The position in question, the process we go through is to solicit applications. It's a voluntary application that we receive applications from schools, and in the case of this biennium, emergency service districts as well. We rate those applications according to the benefit cost analysis tool we talked about before. We take that recommendation to an advisory committee that's been appointed by the legislature. Then we proceed through selecting or making, they make a recommendation about the projects. I don't disagree with their recommendation. Then we enter into contracts. All this biennium's contracts are completed, and then we start the process of they spend their money, reimburse them for the expenses they've incurred.
Thank you. I think I asked a similar question last time around, and when you answered, it reminded me of the answer. So thank you very much.
Sure. Thank you. Mr. Bender, please continue. Thank you.
Package 803 on page 21 is the revenue adjustments package, and this reduces the other fund's beginning balance by $1,665,000 to account for, or to reduces the expenditures by that amount to correct for the amount of actual expenditures of regional solutions dollars that were awarded last time this biennium. The next division of the agency, of the budget, they're not a division of the agency, but is the Oregon Film and Video Office. This agency is responsible for transferring state support dollars to that entity. We have no recommendations there, which is to say that the transfer amount would be what it was in the current service level, which would be $1,164,460. That is the support for the operations of that office. Funding for the actual incentive programs comes through a contribution and tax credit program that is not in the OBDD's budget that's before you. The next division is the Arts Division. The Arts Division holds the Arts Commission and the Cultural Trust. We are recommending partial approval of package 112 on page 24 of 27. The agency requested two additional positions to help manage the Percent for Art program that provides art for public buildings that are constructed, state facilities that are constructed. We're recommending one of the positions, and we recommend that you increase the expenditure limitation by $165,542 and add one additional position. If the agency were, if the workload in this program is still unacceptably high, the agency can come forward in the future asking for the second position.
And colleagues, as I understand it, there is another position coming into the agency as a result of the passage of Senate Bill 441.
Yes, that's correct.
Okay.
Page 25 is again a small revenue adjustment in the Arts Division section of the budget relating to the carryover of funds that were provided last biennium. And finally, our last recommendation for the budget is in the debt service area. On page 27 of 27, the last page of the report, we're recommending that you reduce debt service expenditures by $2,492,988. The reason you are allowed to do this or able to do this is because the debt services costs are actually going to be that much lower than was anticipated when the agency built its budget some time ago. So this reduces the funding to the level actually needed and frees those funds available to support other needed programs in the state budget. That completes the LFO recommendations on the budget. I'm very happy to answer any questions.
Colleagues, any questions of Mr. Bender? Okay. As a courtesy to the agency, you had the opportunity to go over the budget ahead of time. Any questions from you guys? Okay. Thank you. In that case, I think we're prepared to begin entertaining motions. Co-Chair Gomberg.
Well, Madam Co-Chair, I don't know how entertaining I'll be, but I'll certainly be happy to move the LFO recommendation.
Your slug illustration was very entertaining.
Thank you.
Colleagues, slug illustration notwithstanding, you have heard Co-Chair Gomberg's motion to accept the LFO recommendation. Any questions? Any discussion? Any objections? So ordered. Co-Chair Gomberg.
Madam Co-Chair, I would move the... No wonder I was confused.
It's down here.
Thank you. Madam Co-Chair, I move the LFO recommended budget note.
And I'm going to ask Mr. Bender to read the budget note that has been the practice previously, to read the budget note into the permanent record.
Certainly. The subcommittee finds that the Oregon Metals Initiative contributes
oh,
to...
Oh, you read it. I'm
I did.
Sorry.
I can
We've heard
it
that... No, it was a dandy budget note the first time. It remains a dandy budget note. Colleagues, you have heard Co-Chair Gomberg's motion on the budget note. Any questions? Any discussion? Any objection? The budget note is adopted.
Next, we have performance measures, KPMs. The KPM report is attached. The KPMs for this agency are related to job creation numbers, tax income taxes generated by the department's investments or assistance to businesses, new export sales for assisted clients, industrial site certifications, community, and in the infrastructure side of the agency, the number of community capital construction projects that are planned, that are built, and that address economic development or health and safety issues. The agency also is proposing two new KPMs, which they reported earlier to the Legislative Assembly. These are to monitor success of some of the small business assistance programs that the agency operates. In this particular table, which is a little difficult to read, these are actually the first two. They're both numbered 5. I apologize for that, but the program makes it very difficult to correct things of that nature. But one of them is the number of federal contracts awarded to Oregon businesses receiving government contract assistance program assistance. This would be a new KPM. The agency is recommending a target of 200 per year of actual businesses or contracts that would be awarded to the companies that are being assisted, and that the target of $35 million being the value of those contracts be adopted. LFO would recommend that you approve the key performance measures and key performance measure targets in this particular table, but do note that to change the second one, which is labeled a proposed delete KPM to a proposed new KPM. I'd be happy to answer any questions.
Colleagues, any questions? Representative Woodson.
I just have one on number two, the number of jobs retained. Basically is less by 2017, and I was wondering why that would be instead of increasing, like number of jobs created goes up, but number of jobs retained goes down. If I'm reading that
properly. You are reading that correctly, yes.
Oh, do we know why?
Well, we did ask the agency to identify targets that they thought would be reasonable given the situation and budget that they're addressing. These targets do go down, and the explanation for the number of jobs retained number going down is that the number of jobs retained is in some sense a lagging measure. It looks at the ongoing impacts of initiatives and events that the projects that the department funded in the past. There were a number of projects that they funded in the during the depths of the recession where they were able to retain large number of employees. After several years, they no longer count those jobs. So this is reflecting the tailing down of those projects. The additional, the added number of new jobs created reflects an intent of the department to move in toward creating jobs, increasing its activity currently in creating new jobs, but some of the legacy job creation efforts will no longer be included under the methodology.
Is that responsive, Representative?
It is. I was wondering if it was federal funds or why were these some jobs that were businesses that were created and they're going away, or I mean, what?
Oh. That I did not mean to apply that. Oh, it looks like.
I will invite the agency up. Thanks. Mr. Trummer.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Members of the committee, for the record, Evo Trummer with Business Oregon, Representative Whitson. What Ms. Labenda explained is we track job retention over 5 years. So after the sixth or seventh year, if a big project rolls off the counting, if you will.
Oh, I see. Okay.
That is sort of the reduction in that.
Great. Thank you for that clarification. That was responsive. Okay. Representative Gumber.
Madam Co-Chair, I would move the...
Senator Hansel.
I just want to, on KPM 4, new export sales to assisted clients, is the first figure 87 million? Is that the biennium and it's split out then in 2 years?
No. That current result is also an annual figure, so the targets are well below the most current amount. There a reason for that is that particular year was somewhat of an anomaly that is not anticipated to be able to repeat that. There was, I forget, one or two clients who had exceptionally large sales as a result of efforts from the department. The $47.8 million would be more reflecting of the long-term trend as opposed to that 1 year.
Follow up.
The one right below it, number six, 5 acres is the goal for certified ready. That seems pretty minuscule to me, or maybe I'm missing something.
I'm going to invite the agency up to comment on that. That $87 million in exports, those were all onions from the Pendleton area.
Well, we want to keep them coming. What are we?
Sir Hansel, it looks like 5 sites, maybe not acres.
We'll get clarification from the agency.
Site-slice acres, okay.
Again, Lynn Chesler from Business Oregon. Yes, you're absolutely right. It's sites, not acres.
Okay, well, it says sites slash acres on the, in the deal, so.
Correct, and we reported sites.
Okay.
As our figure, not the number of acres, would be substantially larger than that.
Oh, I was hoping, yep. Yeah.
Okay. Yeah.
Thank you. Any other questions, colleagues? Senator Hansel.
Perhaps for clarification for someone like myself just reading, if we're not going to list acres, then a suggestion would be scratch it out or put 9/whatever. Just a thought. It's not worth it now, but it's for
colleagues, any objections to striking acres and making this purely a report on sites?
Should be that way.
Representative Reed.
Madam Chair, no objection. I guess it would be nice to say the number of sites and perhaps the number of acres that they represent.
That'd be good.
That'd be great.
Okay. Include both.
Yep. That's the sense of the committee. Any objection? Okay, thank you. All right.
Madam Co-Chair
Gomberg.
I would move the LFO recommendation on key performance measures.
Colleagues, you have heard Representative Gomberg's motion on the key performance measures. Any questions? Any discussion? Any objection? They are adopted. Mr. Bennett.
Thank you, Madam Co-Chair. The Legislative Fiscal Office, based on the recommendations that you've approved, recommends a total budget of $13,252,554 general fund, $109,370,826 in lottery funds, $66,274,837 in other funds, $39,969,742 in federal funds, $200,972,465 in non-limited other funds, and 136 positions, 133.74 FTE, and that Senate Bill 5525 be amended by the dash two amendments posted to OLS in order to adopt those budget numbers into law.
Colleagues, any questions of Mr. Bender? Co-Chair Gomberg, I would entertain a motion.
Thank you, Madam Co-Chair. I would move adoption of the dash two amendments to Senate Bill 5525.
Colleagues, you've heard the motion. Any questions? Any discussion? Any objections? The dash twos are adopted.
Carry on.
We need to move the final motion. Co-Chair Gomberg.
Madam Co-Chair, I would move 5525 as amended to the full committee with a due pass recommendation.
Colleagues, you've heard Co-Chair Gomberg's motion. Any questions? Any discussion? Any Representative Nierman.
Thanks, Madam Chair. I appreciate your indulgence on this. This budget was one that I spent the most time on of anyone. I traveled from Lebanon to Portland to Corvallis to all over looking at facilities, and I still don't feel like I'm all that much smarter on it. It's a big budget with a lot of tentacles, and I just have a couple of things I'd just like to say for the record. So the first one is, I think I'm saying this to myself as much as anybody, is even though a lot of this is lottery money, that lottery money's not free, and I need to take care to use it as carefully as I do with general fund money. The second thing is that, and again, I'm kind of saying this as kind of an observation to myself, is that when the government engages in economic activity with business, we need to be very careful with that. And I think the Oregon Constitution reflects that also when it says the state shall not subscribe to or be interested in the stock of any company, association, or corporation. That's from Article 11, Section 6. And I'm not implying that we're doing that, but just that whoever was the framer of that article had that in the back of their mind, that that was a danger. And so I take that as a warning. I also wonder about some of the lack of diversity in the Oregon Business Development Department, specifically that it's so heavily focused on green things. And I get it that that's kind of the modern thing right now, but that worries me. So I'm glad to be a yes on this budget. It's got some things in it that are very, very good, very, very good for Oregon. It's got some things that give me the facepalm moment, but I think overall this is a good thing, so I'll be a yes on this.
Thank you for your comments. Colleagues, any other comments? We have the final motion made by Co-Chair Gomberg to move this budget forward. We've had questions, discussions, any objections? There being none, The bill moves to the full with a due pass recommendation, and we need carriers.
I'm in.
Representative Gomberg for full and the House, and I will do the Senate side.
We can mix things up. You can do the House. I can do the Senate.
Okay. Colleagues, I am going to close the work session on Senate Bill 5525, and we are going to stand at ease for a moment for a as a courtesy to a colleague for a quick consultation. And so we are at ease for a back on the record. Are you okay?
Yeah. You want me to go around?
Yes, please. Yes, you just got slightly ahead of me. So I am now going to open up a work session on House Bill 2280A relating to the Oregon Growth Board. I am going to ask Mr. Bender to introduce the subject, and then we are going to ask our colleague and committee member, Representative Reed, to discuss the bill with the committee. Mr. Bender. Yeah, go ahead.
House Bill 2280A relates to the Oregon Growth Board. We have information posted to OLIS for you. This bill was reported out of the House Committee on Higher Education, Innovation, and Workforce Development, and it was referred to Ways and Means by prior reference. You held a public hearing on the bill on June 8th. What the measure as it comes to you does is it transfers the appropriation of monies in the Oregon Growth Fund from the Oregon Growth Board to the Oregon Business Development Department. It expands membership of the Oregon Growth Board, and it authorizes the board to waive the requirement that monies from the Oregon Growth Account and Oregon Growth Board be invested in the state. We have also for you the Dash A6 amendments. The Dash A6 amendments make additional changes to the membership of the board. They restore the non-voting status of the director of the Oregon Business Development Department on the board, but allow the director to place a designee, and they add a second at-large voting member to the board. The amendments also repeal the authorization granted to waive the in-state investment requirements, thereby maintaining the current requirements.
Okay, colleagues. Senator Hansel.
Madam Co-Chair, on a, I guess, abundance of caution, I am the Senate representative on this growth board as the non-voting member.
Thank you. That's noted for the record. All right. Any questions of Mr. Bender? All right. With that, we are going to invite testimony from Representative Reed.
Thank you, Madam Co-Chair. I wonder if we might also invite Beth Cook up as the staff for the growth board.
Ms. Cook?
Thanks. So, first, it's the first time I've testified in this committee room. It's interesting how much further the dais is away than some of the other committee rooms. I am with Senator Hansel, the House non-voting ex officio member of the Growth Board. And what I want to do is just give you a brief sense of my perspective on this bill, and having watched the progress of the Growth Board and what I consider to be very good results. The Growth Board was created essentially to help use some of the state's limited dollars that we had already committed to a similar purpose through the Education Stability Fund and the Growth Account to help the entrepreneurial economic development climate in the state. I think this bill has a number of elements. The one that remains in the subject of some discussion is about the side letter. I think, and I'm happy to be corrected, but I think the other elements having to do with membership and the this place of the fund in the Business Development Department as opposed to DAS, I don't think those are in dispute. So I'm going to set those aside for a moment. I'm happy to come back to them if they're of interest to the committee. Mm-hmm. The question, I think, before the committee is the side letter. And the reason that's important is that it would allow, if passed, allow the board to pursue opportunities to the benefit of Oregon with a bit more flexibility. To be clear, the intent of the board is not to invest outside of Oregon. I appreciate the way that the summary was read, but I just want to be clear that the board is committed to making investments that accrue to the benefit of Oregon. What happens sometimes is that successful, well-known funds who are oversubscribed as a result of their strong performance in the past don't want to sign the side letter. And to put that in blunt terms, a firm, some names that you probably know, and Beth may share these names, might be willing to have the state participate. But when we say we need you to sign this letter, they say, forget it. We've got others who are ready to invest without that requirement. And I may be putting words in their mouth, but I think there it has a little bit of a chilling effect on the relationship because it comes across as a bit of an insult. The board is not, if this bill passes, going to stop using the side letter. I think it would say in certain cases where there is a long history of success and a long relationship with the state of Oregon, they might say we don't need that side letter in specific cases. But that would allow us to participate with funds that are successful, that have been successful, with firms that are well-known and very well-respected in the state and around the country. The only reason that the board would be interested in investing in those opportunities would be because of that history and because of that fund's commitment to investing in the state of Oregon. So, in firms in the state of Oregon. So I think that if we agree that we want this board to be successful, this is an important tool that the board would like to use. And as an ex officio member of the board, this has been a matter of some discussion over the months that we've operated. And I feel compelled to represent that perspective from the board, who was part of our policy committee, who came and testified, who came and advocated for this change. So I let the chair know in advance that I feel very strongly about that, and I need to make sure that the committee is aware of that. So thanks for letting me go on for a bit. I'm happy to answer questions, but I know Beth has some things to add to.
Thank you. Any questions of Representative Reed? Being none, Ms. Cook.
Chair Johnson, members of the committee, Representative Reed is absolutely correct. The intent of this shift is not to change the way that the investments are being made for the Growth Board. They are committed. This entire board was created, in fact, to focus on proving the model that you can invest in funds that are investing in Oregon and get a return. Increasing access to capital throughout the state is very, very important to our members. And I think that the work that they've done over the last biennium has proven out the success that we're having. But the fact is that there have been a number of deals, including Madrona, which is absolutely one of the most, you know, successful funds that we've had in the Oregon Growth account within the portfolio. They've recently reopened, so they have a new fund. There was a placeholder because the Growth Board wasn't an original, and they were an original investor in a previous fund to be able to have space within that fund to invest. And this has been a very, you know, well-returning fund. Absolutely, the board would like to have participated. But as Representative Reed said, this is one of those funds that was oversubscribed. So they had more investors that wanted to come into their fund than there was space available. And one of the deals under this, they were not willing to sign the side letter. And so the Growth Board was not able to make that investment. And it's one that, you know, there are others, you know, K1 is another that was in a similar circumstance. These are funds that are already investing. They've shown that they are good partners. You know, they're investing in Oregon. What the Growth Board does is to help draw additional attention for these funds into Oregon, so they're going to be investing more. And so the sad reality is by losing out on the opportunity to invest in these funds, you know, yes, they may continue to invest in Oregon, but we lose that partnership, that ability to elevate, you know, this, you know, our perspective, you know, to elevate, you know, where we are within, and you know, how they're making their investments. You know, they have, you know, how many of the times are you going to be visiting? So it's really important to have as a tool, and the board, you know, they view that this would be something they would use rarely in special circumstances, but they do need to have that flexibility in order to gain the returns that they're supposed to be returning, you know, under the Oregon Growth account.
Ms. Cook, for the benefit of people that are listening to this and may not know what you're talking about with respect to a side letter, would you define that and give an example of why Madrona would not want to sign it?
So a side letter, so you would have your LP document, your limited partner documents that you would sign, and then there will always be some little changes potentially that, and the current requirement under the statute is that there's verbiage that you have to invest in Oregon. And so that is the key piece, that they are not, you know, at this point, even if they are going to be investing, in fact, more than they would invest in Oregon, it's they have to go to all of those other limited partners in order to get approval in order to have those side letters signed. So it's an administrative process that if you're oversubscribed, if you have more investors than you would even need to, you know, say they've aimed for a $100 million fund, if you already know that you have $115 million worth of investors that want to participate, it's simply something that they can say, no, we're not going to do it.
And Madam Chair, if I could underscore that point, I think Ms. Cook maybe didn't highlight it quite as much. If Oregon requires this, then Madrona has to go back to all the other partners who don't necessarily have the same interest in Oregon and say, in order to take this money, we have to sign this letter. Those other partners who don't have the same commitment are likely to say, no, we don't want that. But without the side letter, their commitment to Oregon, their commitment to the region, and their already acquired expertise and familiarity with the region and the contours of how our economy works, that is a big part of how they make their decisions. So I think we want to take advantage of that without foreclosing the opportunity because of the other partners.
Alex. Let's start with Representative Witt and then go to Representative Whitsitt, and then I'll put myself in the queue.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Beth, you said that these funds are investing in Oregon. You stated that a couple of times. Can you give us an indication, some kind of range of what percentage of those funds we might expect to be invested in Oregon?
So, Chair Johnson, Representative Witt, actually during the OBDD budget hearing in March, there was a memo that was requested and it was provided, and it's under those materials, and I think Mr. Bender has that on under our list on that bill. So it's during the course, I'm just looking at the exact numbers so I can give you. Since its inception, the Oregon Growth Account has committed or contractually promised to invest $122 million to 40 different funds that operate as limited partnerships. Through year-end 2014, $97.7 million of those commitments have been funded, leaving $23.7 million to be drawn. But the funds receiving capital have deployed $194.3 million in greater than 140 Oregon-based companies. So you're already, that leverage is there. So this is not something that we say, oh, we hope that they're going to invest more in Oregon than they are. But there's a historical, there's data to show that's in fact happening. So,
thank you,
Representative Whitsitt.
This is sort of a little off what we're talking about, but I just want, for the record, to make sure that nowhere in this bill will it preclude investments in certain companies that, for example, mining funds or hydrocarbon-based companies, or say exclusively green energy, this doesn't limit what we are able to invest in that may come back into the state or not, right?
Feel free to correct me, but Madam Chair, Representative Whitsitt, it doesn't, just to be clear, the Growth Board is not investing in companies, they're investing in funds who invest in companies, but to the direct answer to your question, no, I don't think there's any specific limitation on sector or that sort of thing.
Okay.
All right.
And Chair Johnson, Representative Whitsitt, the portfolio is incredibly diverse, actually. It's advanced manufacturing is one area that I would particularly like to be able to do more in, but technology, timber, consumer products. So it's an amazing portfolio. Thanks. That's been developed.
Ms. Cook, you described in response to Representative Witt's question a rather robust investment in Oregon.
Yes.
So what problem are we fixing here other than we're taking money that comes from the Education Stability Fund into the growth account and now giving the growth account ostensibly permission to take Oregon money, and contrary to the original formation of this process, invest in New Jersey?
So, Chair Johnson, many of those investments are legacy investments that were made prior to the requirement of the side letter previously.
But I recall that when this whole initiative was undertaken, it was with the idea that this would be Oregon money invested in Oregon mm-hmm. companies, and that was the purpose in doing it. Otherwise, mm-hmm. why not just revert these funds to the treasurer and let the treasurer's office make investments along with all of the other money that they manage on behalf of the citizens of the state of Oregon? This was unique in mm-hmm. my legislative memory, to say that it was Oregon only. And now you're asking to change that. Why not just give the whole fund back to the treasurer?
So, Chair Johnson, respectfully, these funds have been invested in Oregon. And again, you have the data that you've had, you know, it's a fairly good rate of leverage you've already achieved. But the reality is there is also a fiduciary responsibility to maintain returns to this fund.
And under the definition of the original founding principles was that it was Oregon only.
Yes. And Chair Johnson, absolutely. These funds that would be allowed to not have a side letter, these are funds that are investing, in fact, in Oregon, that have that ability and have shown a track record. And this is about, you know, providing flexibility for the board. This is not changing the intent or the direction of where those investments are being made at all.
It could change the outcome, though. We could be investing in New Jersey.
Well, Chair Johnson, actually, these funds invest all over the country. We are, you know, so if you may have $200 million fund and the Growth Board may invest a $5 million portion, those there are companies throughout the country. But what we're doing is we're providing funds to investors who are looking at Oregon and who are interested in providing capital within Oregon and developing those partnerships. And that's really that has been something that I've really, over the last 15 months, it's been amazing to start to get to know some of these fund managers that are actually interested in Oregon for the unique things that we do. So it's about drawing additional attention from those funds. And we're growing, as another example, the Oregon Growth Account, the Oregon Angel Fund, an Oregon-based fund focusing entirely on Oregon, we also have to go through the legal process of providing a side letter with that fund. And those are Oregon investors. They're based, you know, they're focused in Oregon. That's their mission. And again, because the current statute requires it, we have to provide a side letter. And again, that's just additional legal at this point for a fund that is focused on Oregon.
Colleagues, any other questions? Mm-hmm. Representative Woodson.
Would it be possible to see what the original bill was that the Oregon Growth Fund came from? I mean, how this was set up for those of us who weren't here?
Mr. Bender?
We could provide you a copy of the statutes that the enabling legislation.
It begs the question, though. I mean, Representative Reed and I were just discussing this out in the hallway. It asks the question, should Oregon be in the venture capital business? And that question, I mean, it's high, high, high risk. Occasionally high, high, high return. Occasionally not so much. But we made the decision that this particular account would be set up for that purpose. Correct me if I'm wrong, Representative Reed.
You're not at all wrong, Madam Chair. I would add just a little bit of nuance to that, which is that the and perhaps in part in answer to Representative Witz's question too, the Growth Board was essentially an update and slight refinement of the Growth Account, which existed for quite some time earlier. So I contend, and here's where I'm lapsing into a little bit of advocacy that's not a direct question or answer to your question, but I think there is a case for this because what we're trying to do is to provide some access to capital, some gaps that aren't being filled already, and to attract the attention from those funds who might otherwise not pay any attention to Oregon. What we found is that when there is a reason for a fund to be here, they're more likely to be paying attention to other opportunities that may not be apparent initially. They may be serving on boards. Once they're here, they may be part of other kinds of entrepreneurial ecosystem kinds of groups. And then they're able to see other opportunities. So that's proven to be successful.
That happens, side letter notwithstanding.
But not necessarily, Madam Chair, because respectfully, if we go to them and say, hey, here's an opportunity, we need you to sign this side letter, and they are oversubscribed, they have other opportunities with other people that aren't going to require that, they'll say, no thanks, we'll go take the money from elsewhere, and maybe we won't be spending so much time in Oregon.
Which takes me back to my argument that we're changing the underlying principles by eliminating the absolute stricture that it has to be in Oregon.
Madam Chair, I think I don't want to sound argumentative or repetitive. I think we have a fundamental disagreement on that piece. I think this is an important tool for flexibility for the board to build on what I think is already good results and do better for the state.
Just as an aside, what are the results right now? What's the performance?
So as of March, now, again, this is a newer board, and they've inherited legacy investments that went through a recession. So there was a bit of a J-curve in that it was 1.5% IRR as of March. But that's continuing to improve. And, you know, again, as you know, with any investment strategies, you're going to often have a J-curve. And so that is coming up now, and so it's continuing to go forward.
Two things to add to that, Madam Chair. One is the definition of the J curve. In you know, when you think about it, it makes sense. If you're investing in an early stage company, there's initially a decline as that company is building their prototypes and working on distribution, that sort of stuff. And then when success comes, the curve comes back up. The other thing is that's I think a total rate, but
yes,
that varies over time. And as particular investments mature, there can be very different numbers.
Representative Witt, then Representative Woodson.
I'm trying to find a way to determine whether our net investment is increased by making the letter voluntary. And my inartful question does your answer will not adequately answer this, I don't think, but I'm at least trying.
No confidence, but I'm
trying to find, get close anyways, to get a pulse beat. Can you describe for us the investments that perhaps we lost due to the letter as compared to what some of the funds that ultimately ended up investing here, what that balance looks like?
Madam Chair, Representative Witt, I think I could make some fairly general statements, and Beth can clean up and refine them. I think it is essentially the matter of sort of a demand question. So
yeah,
if I'm Madrona and I have a long record and really successful results, there are people who are beating the path to my door saying, I want to be in your next fund. Even if I'm a veteran of Madrona as a person and have left and started my own fund, I might have some people because of Madrona being on my resume, but not as much because it's not the same team, it's not the same name, it's not all of that. So, and as a result, the folks who want to invest in my new fund, they're not as numerous, and I can't be as choosy or as demanding. So in general terms, I think the folks who are willing to sign the side letter are one of a couple of types. One, maybe very experienced individuals, but in a different configuration or a different team, who don't have the same track record on which to base themselves, even though they may have the same skills and all the same stuff. It's just a different sort of setup. Or there's someone like the Oregon Angel Fund who is specifically focused on Oregon and for whom it doesn't matter. It's just, frankly, a redundant thing, and they'll do it even though they're not going to be investing anywhere outside of Oregon anyway. So I think those are the two categories of people or entities who are more willing to sign the side letter. The folks who have more results and more opportunities are going to say, no thanks. What did I miss?
Representative Senator Johnson, Representative Witt. Chair Johnson, Representative Witt. I think Representative Reed did a very, very accurate, you know, picture. Drew a very accurate picture of how that is currently working. Is that, you know, it's the better funds, those who are oversubscribed, those who have a track record, that are often turning to us and saying, no, we do not want to sign the side letter, you know, or have the investment. But I mean, that is the ultimately many of your best performing funds as well. So in order to balance the portfolio with the newer funds, because, you know, we do. I mean, Women's Venture Capital Fund was the first fund that I had the privilege of doing due diligence on this year. It's a fund that focuses on, you know, having a woman founder as part of their team. Seven Peaks is located in Bend. You know, those are brand new teams who have never had funds before. So they're you talk about higher risk. They are higher risk, but they're also, you know, amazing potential within them.
And
they're,
to be clear, sorry to interrupt, they haven't had funds in that current configuration.
Correct.
They're made up of people with lots of experience
right,
in different places.
And they have, so that's an organization, those are organizations that I'm sure the board would continue to require a side letter so that, you know, they maintain their focus on Oregon as much as possible for those investments. But for Madrona and for others who have a longer track record, you know, that's where it's become difficult to get the higher value institutional funds to participate.
Can you cite a specific examples of this problematic to name the fund? Don't do so, but somebody who's some fund who said, you know, absolutely concretely, if you're asking me to sign this fund, we're gone. And I mean, this letter, we're gone.
Yes. Chair Johnson, Representative Witt, yes, Madrona and K1 are two of the funds that we lost this year.
And it's not a matter of, well, we didn't like the letter and we got a better offer someplace else. It is specifically.
And these are both, Chair Johnson, Representative Witt, these are both funds that will likely be continuing to invest in Oregon, may not be at the same level that we could have achieved if we'd partnered with them, but they are great quality investments that would have been very valuable for the board's portfolio. Yes.
Let me make sure that I understood you. They're still investing here. They're picking their own opportunities, but when you came to them and said sign the side letter, they said no.
So.
Chair seems Johnson, counterintuitive.
So for instance, they have both had previous funds that, and Madrona is one that's already in the portfolio as an investment previously. So, and that did not have a side letter requirement. And so they're now opened a new fund. Now this is the growth board. So there's now the side letter requirement. And so now they turned down the opportunity.
Representative Woodson.
So I just want to understand, when you said 1.5% in March, is that the rate of return?
So, Chair Johnson, Representative Witsit, yes, if you, again, as Representative Reed described, the J curve, when you make initial investments in early stage companies, when they don't necessarily have revenue coming in yet, so there is always a J curve that comes. There are some legacy investments, as, you know, this portfolio is primarily made up of legacy investments that were made prior to the inception of the Oregon Growth Board, but, you know, that fund, and that is data that is slightly dated at this point. It's, that was from March, actually from the end of December.
Madam Chair, can I put a finer point on that very quickly? There are two factors in that. One, these are early stage companies, so you have that J curve, and two, a large portion of that time series is in the midst of the Great Recession. So, two factors that are a drag on that overall number.
Follow up.
Well, I'm just going from testimony that we heard the other day where the Treasurer's Intermediate Fund is returning 5%, and so they are allowed to invest wherever they want to, I assume, and so I'm just trying to understand, am I comparing apples and oranges here?
Yes.
okay.
Madam Chair, Representative Witsit, yes, because they're different purposes. The intermediate fund, as I understand it, is specifically for returns and nothing else. This is for the specific purpose of filling capital gaps and supporting entrepreneurial and expansion activity in Oregon. And frankly, you know, a lot of these things are, we like to think that we want to have all of those things happen, and in the circumstance that they do, great. But often you have to choose which one is most important. Is it returns? Then that may not be in Oregon. Is it Oregon? Then that may be giving up some returns. And is it startup? That may also be giving up some returns.
Okay.
And actually, I'll add to that briefly. Chair Johnson, Representative Witsit. So it's been about 4 years ago that I became involved in this effort by a happenstance conversation with the state treasurer when he said, can you bring the startups to Salem to help advocate? Because there wasn't a lot of voices for them at the time. To see that this ecosystem is developing in a way that is supportive, mm-hmm. that they look to the growth board, it's been tremendous. So I just think that there's value beyond just the returns, but there's a focus on returns as well.
It begs the question, where are they today? But Representative, what's it?
Yeah, well, it goes to what Senator Johnson is saying. Either we keep it in Oregon and accept the 1.5% or whatever it is, or if we're going to diversify, why not go for something that gets us more consistently? Because you also run the risk of these not succeeding. I mean, you talk
Correct.
About the J curve, a certain percentage of those aren't going to make it, a certain percentage are, and mm-hmm. we are now 7 years into a recession or 8 years into it. When are we going to see, if it's 1.5 now and we've had this recovery mm-hmm. after 7 years? I'm just asking, mm-hmm. you know, the J curve sort of on its side almost. It's like, okay, maybe we're coming up.
Well, Madam Chair, Representative Whitsitt, I think that, remember that the J curve, it starts. You start a new J curve with each investment. So the early ones are generally doing better, and then you have the recession, and the ones that we've made since then are earlier in the J. So I think the folks are. I think that the investments have lots of potential. But you're right. There is a risk of failure. There always is. But the question is compared to what? So if we did go the route that you described in making the returns the primary objective, that's fine. But that means that we are not addressing the capital gap that we hear consistently from entrepreneurs in all sorts of sectors in all parts of Oregon. We're saying no, we're not going to help on that. So it's a question of trade-offs.
Representative Whitsitt, and then we're going to wind this up.
But if we don't limit it to Oregon, I mean I'm starting to understand what she's saying there. I mean, we can't have it both ways. Either we're going to limit it to Oregon and we're going to keep these funds here, or we're going to open it up, in which case we are potentially losing a great deal of money if we open it up to outside of Oregon. I mean, that's how I'm understanding this.
Again, Chair Johnson, Representative Woodson, these funds would still be investing in Oregon. It's just a matter of whether or not the side letter would be executed as part of the contract.
And that may be true, but it would also give the flexibility to not.
Right.
Again, Chair Johnson, I think this would be used fairly rarely, and again, with existing
partners. But the answer
partners,
to my question is yes.
We can, I don't think that it's going to be leading to that. That's not the intent of the board. I can absolutely assure you of that.
But it would be sufficiently permissive to allow them to do so if they wanted to.
Chair Johnson, the reality is there are funds that have side letters that you run the risk no matter what, because you have to make sure that you're having building partnerships. It's not just about a side letter. The legal requirement to have investments in Oregon, there are funds that you can have a legal requirement, but they don't just leave and have it now. There are funds. I mean, can you?
I'll help a little bit, Madam Chair. The other piece is that in addition to the legal requirements, the intent of the incentive for the fund is going to be to keep their investors happy. So they're not going to want to do that and have the state of Oregon, which is a significant investor in other places, a very large fund, as you well know, bad-mouthing them, acquiring a reputation for not meeting their requirements. That's not legal, but I think that's also human nature.
I'm going to exercise the prerogative of the chair. We're past time, and I am going to close the work session on House Bill 2280A. I don't think that I think we still have some additional information to gather. I think, colleagues, you have heard the question clearly described at this point. Remember, the genesis of this money is the Education Stability Fund. And from my perspective, the purpose of this whole thing was invest in Oregon. So we've closed the work session. Thank you very much for your testimony. And, Mr. Bender, when can we have adequate notice to post this again for a committee deliberation and vote?
We are still maintaining the 24-hour notice in Ways and Means, so the earliest that you would be able to post this again would be for Monday.
Okay, colleagues, we will repost this for Monday. Representative Whitsitt.
May I ask for a copy of the growth board, the two things? Okay, great. The description of the board and of the fund originally. So those of us who weren't here.
Yeah, you'd like the genesis of how the fund came to be, and it would probably be helpful to have a pro forma from Ms. Cook.
And maybe legislative intent, if somebody can go back and find the information on that for us.
Okay. Colleagues, anything else? Mr. Bender, anything for the good of the order?
No, committee, you are meeting tomorrow for several policy bills.
Okay. With that, we're adjourned.
Make sure I got the right bills.
With that, we're adjourned.
Make sure I got